flown, I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. This is Bruce Kaplan wishing all the mothers out there a most happy Mother's Day and everybody a most happy weekend. Tonight we have two great mysteries for you, a couple of great Irish songs about mother, and then we end up with a fantastic song from the great George Jessel. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to bruce@radiomasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and answer you. Just have a fantastic weekend, and again, happy Mother's Day to all the wonderful mothers out there.
At 3 o'clock that afternoon, Danny Brine had been riding high, the top crime reporter in San Francisco, with a nice apartment on Russian Hill, $200 a week from the Express, and a lot more on the side. At 4 o'clock, he was nobody, just another newspaper man out of a job. He'd walked into the club nocturne just after dinner, decided he might as well give it to Teddy right from the shoulder. He'd know about it sooner or later anyway. By 9, he'd had 4 martinis, wasn't caring too much what he said one way or another.
A job? Oh, I'm still a reporter, baby. Brother Graves doesn't like my work. There are plenty of others who do.
Graves is an important guy. They'll all listen to him.
He's a tough shirt. I help put him where he is, and he knows.
Oh, wait a minute, Danny.
Napoleon, they call him down there. I'd like to wring his scrawny neck.
Danny.
Hello, Danny.
Huh? Oh, Stan, old boy. Teddy, darling, this is Stan McIntosh, one of my erstwhile colleagues. Teddy Eldridge is Stan.
Hello, Stan.
Sit down. Let's talk over old times on the express.
I only got a minute.
Oh? What's on your mind?
What about,
Oh, go ahead, go ahead. Teddy knows the score.
Oh, I see. Just wanted to tell you, Graves called us all into the office this afternoon. You want to know what he said?
I got a rough idea.
He said you were taking hush-up dough from the dame in that murder case across town. Said you put the bite on her. That's why you got canned.
Oh. Anything else?
Told us he was going to make an example of you.
That's all. Oh, that self-righteous little jerk. I could kill him.
Damn.
Sure, I could throttle him with my bare hands right now.
Now, take it easy, Danny. You better go home and sleep.
Oh, shut up. I don't care who knows.
Doesn't matter what you think. Keep it to yourself.
I tell you, I could kill him. Well, does that shock you, Stan, huh? I could snuff him out right now like that. Tell that to the boys in the city room. And tell them not to worry about Danny Brine. There are plenty of other jobs, Stan. Plenty of jobs.
But there aren't plenty of jobs either, Danny. Three other papers in town. And you can tell by the way the city editors look across the desk at you that Martin Graves has been there first. That though it's all very polite and friendly, they're part of a closed corporation. And if Graves has given the word, the answer is no. By the following Saturday night, you're afraid that he's licked you, though you won't admit it to anyone, not even to Teddy.
Danny?
Yeah?
Oh, Danny, I've got good news. Mr. Merrill called me in this afternoon, raised me to 125.
Say, that's great.
Oh, it's more than they've ever paid for a girl singer. And, Danny, I just want you to know if you need any money...
Now, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Well, since you're not working...
Listen, baby, get this through your head. I'm not out of a job. I'm taking a rest, that's all. When I want a job, I'll get one. Like that.
Oh, don't try and kid me, Danny. I know how it is. I want you to remember I'll do anything for you, Danny. Anything.
Sure, baby, I know that. But just forget about the job business, will you? I'm not worrying. Why should...
Excuse me.
Oh, yeah? What is it, Mike?
There's a telephone call for you. Mr. Graves. He says it's important.
Graves?
Thanks, Mike. You see, Teddy? Nothing to it, huh? Just like that. Yes, Mr. Graves?
Right.
Yeah, what is it?
I want to talk to you about your job.
Well, where are you?
My apartment. Been laid up with a cold. You come up tonight?
When?
Well, what time is it now? I can't tell you why you're up here. Don't know whether it's night or day.
Oh, wait a minute. It's, 9:15.
Well, what about 10?
I don't know. I'll think it over.
You'd better decide tonight. I may feel different tomorrow.
Well, Danny, he finally came around. But it's a matter of pride now, isn't it? You deliberately stay at the club for another hour, knowing it won't hurt to let Graves know you're taking your time. It's 10:30 when you walk up to the door of his apartment. Drop him a cordial nod as he lets you in and shows you to a chair and pours a drink. He wasn't kidding about the cold. The air is strong with eucalyptus oil. He's wearing a wool robe, a heavy towel around his neck. 5 minutes later, he gets to the point.
Well, Danny, there's no use kidding each other. You're a great reporter. We need you on the Express.
Well, thanks.
You want to come back?
Well, I've made up my mind. There are a lot of other jobs, you know.
Not in San Francisco.
Why not?
You ought to know. You've been to the Chronicle, Examiner, the News. They all turned you down.
Well, there are other towns.
but you ought to stay here. You belong here.
Oh, maybe.
I don't want to go into what you did, Danny. I'm willing to forget it, if you are.
I think you learned a lesson.
Hey, look. Let's not even talk about that, huh?
All right. You want to come back?
Okay, Chief. When?
You report Monday morning to Stan McIntosh.
McIntosh? What do you mean?
You're a rewrite man now.
Rewrite? Who do you think you're talking to?
You heard what I said.
Rewrite? Why, you two-bit Napoleon. You think you can run me like a monkey on a string?
Wait a bit, Bride.
Well, you picked the wrong guy, Graves. You can pull the strings, only I don't jump.
Take your head off.
I always wanted to tell you all.
Let go of me, Bride.
Oh, hit me, will you? Oh, you want to play rough, do you? Okay, Napoleon.
Get away from me, Bride. Let go, Bride. You, Graves, I'll kill you.
You forget where you are. Everything stops. There's nothing inside you but a blind red rage. The ends of the towel around his neck tight in your hand. It's quiet now, Danny. No sound but the blood pounding in your head. And then things begin to get clearer. The room comes into focus again. A chair overturned, the desk swept clean, its vase of flowers, the clock, the statuette smashed on the floor. And on the floor, too, is Martin Graves lying very still. You don't have to look any closer, Danny. As a crime reporter, you've seen murdered men before. Lots of them. You sit down, let your head clear a little. Look at your watch. 10:45. You know it's hopeless, Danny. That you'd have a better chance of getting out of this one if you'd murdered Martin Graves in the middle of the Union Square at high noon. A motive. The opportunity. Everything there. All ready for the police. You find yourself thinking of Teddy, of what you're going to tell her. And then you think of something else.
I'll do anything for you, Danny. Anything.
That's it.
Teddy. Yes, Danny. Standing there over the body of Martin Graves. You know, there's only one thing that can save you. An alibi, Danny. You've got to have a sworn statement from Teddy Eldridge that you couldn't have been up here in Graves' apartment. That you were with her at the Club Nocturne all evening. Just as always, from 8 to 12. You get up, start for the phone, and then stop, remembering the switchboard operator. Then as you turn, you hesitate. Decide to answer. Put your handkerchief over the mouthpiece. Lower your voice. The cold. Martin Graves had a bad cold.
Yes?
Martin?
Yes?
Mr. Stark at the city desk. How did he come out with Danny Bryan?
Oh, he hasn't showed up. Looks like he might not come at all.
Just as well. You'd have a hard time making him eat crow. Hey, that cold sounds pretty tough. How do you feel?
Oh, not so good. Just going to bed.
Oh, better not bother you, then. Plenty of rest, you know. Keep warm. Maybe a hot toddy.
That's right.
Good night, Martin.
Good night.
Yes, Danny. There's only one way out. To somehow leave the apartment without being seen. Find Teddy and get the questions answered before they're asked. You take care of your fingerprints, then walk to the door. Open it. Ah, the hall's vacant. You step out quietly, close the door behind you, and tiptoe down to the back stairway. On the main floor, you walk up to the side door opening onto the alley.
Ah, it's locked.
You've got to leave by the main entrance now. Knowing if anyone sees you here, you might as well drive up to headquarters and confess. The lobby is empty. You hurry across it, out the main door.
Well, Mr. Bryan.
Huh? Oh.
You remember me. Name's Bleeker. Horace Bleeker. Met you a while ago through Mr. Gray's. I live in the same apartment house. Is something wrong?
Oh, no, no. Nothing's wrong. You, you startled me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on my way to the airport, leaving tonight for Los Angeles. Seems the streets are full of taxis until you really want one.
You were waiting for a taxi?
That's right.
Well, look, let me give you a lift. I have my car.
Oh, no, I wouldn't think of putting you
in. Oh, not at all. Come on. I insist. That's all. I insist.
You help Bleeker into your car. Start south across Market Street. Gripping the wheel hard to keep from shaking. Tense, nervous, a sick, tight feeling in your stomach. You know you've got to kill Bleeker, too. There's no other way. By the time you hit the fringe of the city, you know how it's going to happen and where.
But, there's really no hurry, Mr. Bryan. My plane doesn't leave till midnight, and it's only 11.
Sure, I know. I just wanted to give you a little leeway.
And another thing, your gasoline gauge looks almost empty. There's a signal oil station at the next corner. Perhaps we'd better stop.
No, not now. I can't stop now.
We'd better slow down. Speed limit 25. I just saw the sign. Look out!
I didn't see him. I didn't...
Why, you cut right in front of that car. Look, here comes the driver.
Hey, you. What's the idea?
Hang on.
Hey, wait a minute. You blasted in my fender. Hey,
Mr. Bryan, you've got to stop.
Forget it, Bleeker.
But that hit and run, you can't...
I said forget it.
It's like a nightmare, isn't it, Danny? You don't think anymore, you only feel. And above everything else, you know you and Bleeker must not be seen together now. He knows something's wrong. Out of the corner of your eye, you see him hunched in the seat like a frightened rabbit, ready to jump out if you slow down.
Dale, did he? But that's not the way to...
I said I'd get you to the airport, didn't I?
But,
we'll take Skyline Boulevard, drop down to the airport at Millbrae. It's a little longer that way, but faster.
But
there's no traffic.
At 11:30, you turn onto the Skyline Boulevard. Dark and deserted now, winding through the trees and the crest of the hills overlooking the bay. And a moment later, you make up your mind. Hold your breath. Pull over onto the shoulder of the road near an old water tower.
What? Why are you stopping here?
That fender I banged up, it's scraping on the wheel.
You pick up a rock from the edge of the highway. Pause a moment. Then...
Bleeker?
Yes?
Give me a hand here, will you?
Matter now.
Take a look down there.
Huh? Where? Why, I don't see anything.
You carry his body to the foot of the embankment. Drop it in a depression behind some bushes. As you climb back up to the road, the shale slides down in a rush, covering it completely.
That ought to do it. Come on. Oh, what's the matter? Come on. Oh, what?
It won't start, Danny. You reach for the choke, and then your eye strikes the gas gauge, and you turn cold inside as you realize what's wrong.
I'm out of gas.
Ten minutes to 12, Danny, and you're stuck next to the water tower. The Bleeker's body lying in the ditch 10 feet away. Teddy will leave the club nocturne at 12:30, And unless you get that call through to her, the whole plan, the solid, life-saving 8 to 12 alibi is gone. You've got to flag a car, get some gasoline. But the Skyline Boulevard is almost deserted at this time of night. Then at last, at 12:15, a pair of lights round the bend in the distance, and a small coupe pulls up to a stop.
What's the matter, buddy? You in trouble?
I'm out of gas.
Oh, sure, you picked a great place, mister.
Hey, you got a hose or something? Could you let me have a little out of your tank?
Brother, you don't know how lucky you are. Well, let's take a look.
Well, I'm in a hurry. I've been waiting here for almost a half hour.
Oh, say, you know, that's dangerous. Never know who might be riding around here this time of night. And here, let me get this turtle back open. But, like I said, you're a lucky man.
You mean you can...
Siphon hose and a gas can. Never catch me on the road without them.
Well...
You fumble around, awkwardly trying to help him as he siphons a gallon of gas out of his tank. 12:30. Teddy might be gone now. It seems 1,000 years before he finally finishes up.
Well, here you are, pal. That ought to get you into the station anyway.
Oh, I'm sure, Will. Thanks a lot.
Oh, here. Take one of my cards. Look me up sometime.
I think I better be going now. I'm in a hurry.
Just a minute.
Oh, what's the matter?
The gas. I think 50 cents ought to do it. Fair enough, huh? Here, take my card.
Before he's had time to get back in his car, you're pulling away from the spot, the accelerator down to the floor, hoping you'll never have the bad luck to run into him again. Somewhere along the way, you find you're still holding on to his business card, and you toss it out the window. Yes, Danny. The only thing that counts now is Teddy. And 10 minutes later, you're on the phone, praying she hasn't left the club.
Hello?
Oh, Teddy?
Danny, where are you?
Never mind. Listen, honey. Is Mike still there?
I think so.
You gotta help me. Mike, too, if you think we can trust him. Oh, then you've got to be sure.
Danny, what's the matter?
I can't tell you now. Just get this. You've got to swear I was at the Nocturne from 8 to 12, that I didn't leave. You said you'd do anything for me, didn't you? You meant that, Teddy. Anything.
Of course, darling.
Well, then don't ask questions. Just do as I say.
All right, Danny. I'll do it. Just as you said.
Well, Danny, somehow the worst is over. The 8 to 12 is going to be the answer. And you know Teddy will make it solid. You wanted Graves' apartment. You never saw Bleecker. And that man on the highway couldn't have possibly seen enough of you in the darkness to identify you. You stay home all day Sunday, knowing it would be smart to keep away from Teddy now. You spend the morning and the afternoon listening to news reports, waiting. But it's not until 10 o'clock Monday morning that the phone rings. It's your old friend Neil of Homicide asking you to drop in at headquarters.
Hello, Neil.
Morning, Danny.
What's this all about? Why are you... Teddy, Mike, what are you doing here?
You can skip the act, Danny. You must have seen the papers on the way here.
Oh, you mean Graves?
I mean Graves.
Oh, I didn't like the guy. Does that mean I killed him?
According to Stan McIntosh, you were a hot prospect a few nights ago.
Oh, sure, a guy has a few drinks, he's sore, but...
But you didn't do it, huh?
No, I didn't do it.
Well, Mike and Teddy have you covered from 8 to 12 on the night it happened. That right?
Yeah. I didn't put my nose out of the club until midnight.
That's the truth, Mr. Neal. Mike and I were with him all the time.
It's just like I told you, Lieutenant. He was right there in the corner booth all the time.
We've been through that once. Let's leave it there.
Well, what about it, Neil?
Well, I guess there's no argument about that, Danny. You were at the club Nocturne from 8 to 12.
Well, Danny, you're in the clear. You feel it. Know it as your friend Neil of the Homicide Division leans back in his chair and studies the three of you. Teddy and Mike really came through. Insisted you couldn't have killed Graves because you weren't out of their sight from 8 until 12. And you know only too well that Graves died at 10:30. So you put it over, Danny. It took 2 murders instead of 1, but your alibi is airtight. Bleeker, the only man who saw you come out of Graves' apartment house, is lying dead outside of town by the old water tower. You haven't a thing to fear, Danny. Not a thing.
You know, this sort of thing isn't too easy when you're dealing with old friends.
You're right, Neil. But since you've just heard that I couldn't have had anything to do with the murder, well, let's forget all about it, huh?
I wish I could, Danny. Only I can't figure you're in the clear. Now, you said you left the club at 12.
Yes?
But I told you, Mr. Neil. Mike and I were with him right up till then.
I heard you, Miss Eldridge. I'm sorry it doesn't mean anything. You see, we placed the time of the murder at 12:15.
Huh? 12:15?
On the nose. During the struggle, an electric clock on Graves' desk was disconnected.
Oh, wait a minute. You're wrong.
Go on, Danny. What's wrong?
Everything's wrong, isn't it, Danny? They've made a terrible mistake.
What time is it now? I caught J-wire up here. Don't know whether it's night or day.
Don't sit there with your mouth hanging open, Danny. You kept that appointment with him, didn't you? Only at 12:15, and you killed him.
No, wait a minute. I did keep the appointment, but not at 12:15. I went up there a little after 10. I left at 10:30.
You expect me to swallow that? Who saw you leave? Who saw you come out of that apartment?
You're in a corner now, gulping as Neil pounds at you. Who can you turn to now, Danny? Who can prove you weren't in that apartment at 12:15?
You remember me. James Bleeker. Horace Bleeker.
He's dead, Danny. Where you left him under 2 feet of shale on the Skyline Boulevard.
Hey, wait a minute, mister. You bashed in my fender.
Lost in the heart of the city. In the maze of streets south of Market.
I'm waiting, Danny.
Let me think. There was one more, another guy.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, another guy. I didn't get his name, but...
The gas? I think 50 cents ought to do it. Fair enough, huh? Here, take my card.
His card? I took his card. I threw it away.
Will you get to the point? Where were you at 12:15? Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I heard you. I guess I haven't got the answer.
Broadcasting from our Lower Snoqualmie Valley studios, Valley 104.9 FM is KAPY-LP, Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Did your mother come from Ireland? 'Cause there's something in you Irish. Will you tell me where you get those Irish eyes? And before she left Killarney, did your mother kiss the Blarney? 'Cause your little touch of brogue you can't disguise. Oh, I wouldn't be romancing. I can almost see you dancing where the Kerry pipers play. Sure, and maybe we'll be sharing in the shamrock you'll be wearing on the next St. Patrick's Day. Did your mother come from Ireland? 'Cause there's something in you Irish, and that bit of Irish steals my heart away.
Ireland, 'cause there's something in New Ivory. Will you tell me where you get those Irish arms?
And before she left, Killarney, did your mother kiss the blarney? 'Cause your little touch of brogue you can't disguise. Oh, I wouldn't be romancing, I can almost see you dancing where the Kerry pipers play. Sure, and maybe we'll be sharing in the shamrock you'll be wearing on the next St. Patrick's Day. Did your mother come from Ireland? 'Cause there's something in you Irish, and that bit of Irish steals my heart away.
And now, with A Murder of Necessity and the performance of Mr. Robert Young, hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
I'm walking along a city street with murder in my heart. Tonight is the night I must kill. Remember the name, Herbie Sachs. Fat, sweaty Herbie Sachs. He'll be sitting behind his big desk and he'll look up at me and smile, and his fat neck will spill over the expensive collar of the expensive shirt that he'll be wearing. So far, so good. No one around. So far, so good. Why do I keep saying that? Some sign painter will have a new job. Scrape the name in gold letters off the glass door. Herbert J. Sachs, private investigator, will soon be dead, gentlemen. Through the panel of the glass door, the fat shadow of the big man sitting happily in his swivel chair. Mr. Sachs waits within, murderer. Knock on his door.
Oh, hold it a minute. The janitor wants to come in.
Gets up from the chair, Herbie. Come and open the door. Meet your doom.
Start in the other office. Oh. Hello, Mark. What do you want? A
few moments of your time.
Oh, I'm busy. Let's make it some...
Inside, Herbie. Go ahead, Herbie. Sit down.
What do you want?
Herbie, I'm through. You bled me for the last nickel.
What are you talking about?
I made a mistake a long time ago. I went hunting and I killed a man. It was an accident. But instead of turning myself in and getting off on a charge of manslaughter, I listened to the advice of a man named Herbie Sachs.
Go home, Mark.
Nobody saw you shoot him, you said. Nobody did, except you, Herbie. I'll be silent, said Herbie.
Now, look, Mark.
I've had to pay for your silence. Haven't I, Herbie? Through the nose.
Who do you think you are, coming here like this? Why, for 2 cents...
For 2 cents, you'd sell your mother, your grandmother, and your wife, Gretchen. A nice girl who doesn't deserve you.
I'm warning you, Mark.
You're through warning people, Herbie. I wonder how many others will breathe easier when once they learn you're no longer exercising a big stick.
What are you going to do?
This. Now the sign painter can scrape the gold letters off the glass door. Herbert J. Sachs sits dead in his swivel chair, the blood running a crazy pattern down the front of his expensive shirt, his mouth silent, no words, no accusations, no talk of any kind, no talk... Wait, Herbie was talking to somebody when I knocked on the door. Nobody here. Who was he talking to? Must have been talking to somebody on the telephone. He didn't hang it up. Hello? Hello? Who's there? Please don't... Herbie's desk drawer had been off the hook. Herbie'd been talking to someone on the phone. Who had it been? Somebody I knew? Somebody I didn't know? Somebody like Herbie who'd make me suffer some more? I had to find out. But how? How? I got an idea. The phone pad. Today, March 24th, and under the date, three names. L. Collins, the name Janice, and a phone number, and an Art LaFoon. Could it have been one of them? On the phone, you heard... What? Was it a radio? Was it a record? That's all you have to go on, but it'll have to be enough. Even now, whoever it was may be calling the police. Down in the corner drugstore, I look up L. Collins. There's only one. Strange for a name like Collins, but only one. Lucius Collins, who lives on North Woodburn Drive. The taxi gets me there in 20 minutes.
Yes?
Mrs. Lucius Collins?
Yes.
Is your husband at home?
Yes. You want to see him?
If it's possible.
Come in. Just follow me. What did you say your name was?
I didn't say, but it's, Paul. Paul Drake.
Oh. Lucius, there's a Mr. Drake who wants to see you.
Drake?
Yes, Mr. Collins. A mutual friend asked me to call. I'd like to speak to you alone, if I may.
I'll close the door.
Mr. Collins,
Sit down, Mr. Drake.
Thank you.
You said a mutual friend sent you? Who?
Herbie Sachs sent me, Mr. Collins.
What does he want?
He's not satisfied with the present setup.
Mr. Drake, I'm paying him all I can now. I can't pay any more. If I did, my wife might find out, and how would I explain it? Doesn't Mr. Sachs understand that?
He's not satisfied, Mr. Collins. That's all I can tell you.
But what am I going to do?
Well, Herbie just gave me a general picture of your situation. Perhaps if you filled me in on the details...
There are no details, Mr. Drake. I made a mistake once. I met a girl. We grew fond of each other. Naturally, my wife suspected something was wrong. She went to Mr. Sachs and had him trail me. He found out about us, the girl and me, but he didn't tell my wife. He said he wouldn't tell her if I paid him. And so I did. The girl went away, but I still paid Mr. Sachs.
I understand, Mr. Collins.
You do? You really do?
Have you been home all evening, Mr. Collins?
Why, yes.
I guess I'll just tell Herbie what you told me. If you can't increase it, you can't do it. That radio over there looks like an old one.
Huh? Oh, it is. We've had that for years. It's broken. I haven't bothered to have it fixed.
Mm-hmm. You got a phonograph?
Yes, an old one. The kind you wind's not much good. It's up in the attic, stored away.
Well, thanks, Mr. Collins.
Thanks?
I mean, for seeing me, or letting me talk to you.
Well, I don't understand it. A man like you working for Herbie Sachs?
I know, Mr. Collins. I don't seem like the kind that would. That poor little man, if only I could have told him, whispered to him, yelled to him, Mr. Collins, your unhappiness is over. The man who held you in the arms of terror is no more. He's dead. He's up in his office, spilling blood all over his nice, clean carpet. You're a free man, free to pick up the pieces of your life and start again. But tomorrow you'll know. It'll be in all the papers. That'll be soon enough. The first name on the list I check off. Lucius Collins is a man with problems of his own. He didn't play his broken radio or the old phonograph stored away up in his attic. So I call the phone number next to the name on the pad that reads Janice.
Just picked it up and walked away with it. Leon's Biotech speaking.
Is Janice there?
Yeah, but she's awful busy waiting on tables. Can I give her a message?
No. I'll call later.
Okay.
I found Leon's bar downtown on Main. It was a cheap place, but it was full of people. Then I saw the girl waiting on the tables. She was pretty, but but a prettiness that was cheap like the bar. I walked over to an empty booth in the corner and sat down. I waited. Then she saw me and came over and stood beside me.
What do you have?
Whiskey and water.
Whiskey and water, right.
Janice.
Hmm?
Come here a minute.
Yeah? What is it?
I want to talk to you.
Look, I'm awful busy right now.
Herbie sent me.
I didn't get your name.
Drake. Paul Drake.
Herbie sent you?
Yes, Herbie sent me.
For what?
What does Herbie usually want?
What kind of a holdup is this? Twice in 1 week.
Herbie's an ugly man, isn't he, Janice?
You're a funny guy. I'd almost get the impression you didn't like him.
Well, it isn't necessary for an employee to like his employer, is it?
No. What are you? His collection agency?
In a sense. I'm also an advisor of his.
What do you mean?
Sometimes I advise him about his clients. Perhaps I could advise him about you.
What would you advise him?
I think you're a pretty girl, a very pretty girl, Janice. I'd advise him of that.
You shouldn't say things like that.
Why not?
Because they're not true.
Yes, they are.
What do you want from me, mister?
I'd like to take you home tonight, to where you live. That's all I want.
That's a lot.
I think you're pretty, Janice. I told you.
I get off in an hour. You can take me home.
In an hour. She got up from the table and walked across the room. There was something strange about this girl, something I didn't understand, but something I had to find out. She stopped at the jukebox in the corner of the bar next to the phone booth and dropped a dime into the machine. That's when I heard the song again.
Well.
Oh. Nice music. You like it?
My favorite record. I play it all the time.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Well, should we go?
I'll call a cab.
You don't have to.
Why not? Ride home in style.
It's only a couple of blocks from here. We can walk. Wouldn't you like to walk?
All right. Beautiful night. Not a cloud in the sky.
I love fresh air.
What's your last name, Janice?
I've got a lot of them. Call me Janice Gibson.
All right, Janice Gibson. What kind of a girl are you, Janice?
If you work for Herbie Sachs, you know all about me.
Not the details, pretty girl.
Why do you keep saying pretty girl?
Because it's a statement of fact. You are pretty, Janice.
I'm the kind of a girl that you read about in the confession magazines. Only they make those stories up. They're fiction. My story's not fiction. It's a real one.
I believe you.
Long time ago, a girl with big ideas came out of the sticks, landed in a big city.
And she met a man named Herbie Sachs.
She met him after she'd gone off the deep end. She wanted thrills. Those thrills ended her up in a straitjacket in the sanitarium. They were the kind of thrills you don't write the family back home about.
Mm-hmm. But how does Herbie figure?
Herbie is a man with many ways and means. And when the girl ended up in an addict, Herbie was the big brother. He had a soft shoulder and he stretched out a helping hand.
Mm-hmm.
After I was cured, he told me I had to pay him for his silence. The silence that would keep the family back home from finding out about the thrilling things that had happened to the girl from the sticks.
Are you?
Yes. Well over them.
That's good.
Why do you work for a man like him?
Oh, check it off the living. Were you at the bar all night tonight?
Ever since 8 o'clock, why?
Nothing. I guess I'm making conversation because I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Look, mister, you can walk on the other side of the street. I didn't
ask
you
to... Oh, wait a minute. I didn't mean it that way, Janice. Honest. Believe me, what I meant was I want to talk because I suddenly feel kissing you.
This is where I live. The Bug House. Want to come up and meet the fleas? Courtesy of Herbie Sachs.
Janice, don't be bitter.
I got one room and a hot plate. What am I supposed to do? Dance a dance because I can't afford anything better?
Look, I'll talk to Herbie. I'm his advisor, remember? Maybe I'll advise him to change his mind.
If you thought you could...
I'll try. That much I promise. I'll advise him that you ought to have a nice apartment to live in. And a stove.
Pa?
Yes?
You want to come upstairs? I'll make you some coffee.
I have something to take care of, and it's late. Maybe after...
You won't come back. Once you leave, I won't see you anymore. You're that kind of guy.
I'll come back.
I won't see you again. I know I won't. Kiss me, Paul. Hard. Like you were going away for a long time. Come upstairs. Let me make you some coffee.
I'll be back.
Paul.
Janice, someday if you ever find out that this is all over, go back home to where there aren't thrilling things for a girl like you to do.
I don't know.
They'll never know. Home is a long and faraway memory.
I don't know.
Promise me. On the kiss.
Maybe. Maybe, Paul. Maybe.
I took her in my arms and kissed her again. Then she turned and disappeared through the door into the cheap boarding house. And the black night closed in on me again, and the fear and fright returned. Under the street light up at the corner, I checked the last name on the phone pad, Art LaFoon. He's not at his place of business on Houston Avenue, the watchman tells me. Mr. LaFoon is never at his place of business at 2:30 in the morning, he says with raised eyebrows. Even though it is a novelty business and novel things are always happening. So I wait until 8 o'clock the following morning. Near his novelty business, I find a very shabby hotel, and for $2, the night clerk tells me that I can have a bed with a clean sheet and a loud knock on my door when it's 7 o'clock. By 5 minutes after 8, I'm standing in front of Mr. LaFoon's novelty business on the third floor, my hand closed tightly around a piece of blue steel that means death for Mr. LaFoon.
Yeah, all right, Midge. There's a shipment I'll get out to you on Friday. Okay. I promise you, Midge. When LaFoon makes a promise, he keeps his word.
Okay, kid, I'll see you. Ah, hello, brother.
Mr. LaFoon?
That's it, brother LaFoon. Anything that's novel or new, see LaFoon. Here, let me show you these small telescopes we just got in. I made some a couple of years ago, but those were tame. Here, take a look at this one.
Look,
Go ahead. Just squint your eye. You gotta focus.
Herbie sent me.
Yeah, I was... What was that, brother?
Herbie Sachs.
Yeah? You mentioned the name, Herbie Sachs. What am I supposed to do?
You know Herbie.
Who are you, anyway?
I work for Herbie Sachs.
You made another statement. Tell me how to react, brother.
Hey, look, Mr. Novelty Man, I don't know how to convince you, but I'll get rough if I have to.
Okay, take it easy, brother, take it easy. That's an expensive shirt.
That's why I'm here. Herbie doesn't like you buying such expensive shirts.
Who are you?
I'm recently hired to make collections. I've come to collect.
You know what? I think you're lying. You don't work for Herbie Sachs. You don't work for him at all.
I told you I was just recently hired.
And why didn't he tell me you'd be around, brother? I talked to him on the phone last night. Why didn't he tell me, huh?
You talked to Herbie on the phone last night?
Yeah, brother, I talked to him.
What happened when you talked to Herbie?
What do you mean, what happened? Who are you, brother?
Nobody you'd be interested in.
Yeah? Well, maybe the cops would be interested.
Put it down.
Get your hands off of me.
Later, Mr. LaFoon. Later, we'll take care of some unfinished business when it's dark and no one will see me. I got out of the building. I had to before someone saw me. Saw my face and would recognize it again. But tonight when it's dark, I'll wait for you and follow you, Mr. LaFoon. It was you on the phone. Now I know. Buy a paper and go home. Lay low. When I get home, I open the paper, and there it is, on page 2, an account of the death of Herbert J. Sachs, the private investigator, shot through the chest twice by an unknown assailant. How soon would it be before Mr. LaFoon would tell the police the name of the unknown assailant? Long enough. Because LaFoon was the kind of man who'd wait for the killer to get in touch with him. LaFoon was the kind of man who could be bribed. And then while I tried to sleep... Hello?
Mark, This is Gretchen Sachs, Herbie's wife.
Yeah. Hello, Gretchen.
Did you read about Herbie in the papers this morning?
Yeah, I read, Gretchen.
I want to talk to you, Mark.
Talk?
It's important. Can you come out to the house?
Have the police been out to the house yet?
No. I was down for a few minutes at the morgue to identify the body.
That's all?
That's all. It's important that I talk to you. I was on the other end of the phone, Mark.
Why didn't you answer me when I picked up the receiver?
I had to take time to think things through.
Have you thought them through?
Yes. Will you come out to the house and talk to me?
Yes. Gretchen, I'll be out. In a little while.
I'll wait for you.
It was Herbie's own wife, Gretchen, on the phone. Sweet and lovable Gretchen. And now the wife of the man I murdered waits to talk with me. What about the weather? No. No, she waits to talk business. Before the police arrive, she waits to take up where the fat man left off. Another murder of necessity. Ring the doorbell, murderer.
Hello, Mark. Come in.
Mark! Oh, Mark. You fool. You fool.
I'm sorry, Gretchen.
I hated him. I hated him.
What are you saying?
I couldn't stand him. Everything he was, I hated. He wouldn't let me go.
No. I don't believe you.
Last night, I called him on the telephone. Called him to tell him to come home. Because...
No.
When he got home, Mark, I was going to kill him.
Gretchen.
Operator,
get me police headquarters. I just committed a murder that wasn't necessary at all.
Those days
fairy tales she told. That road all paved with gold I found in my mother's eyes. Just like a wandering sparrow, one lonely soul, I walk the straight and narrow to reach my goal. God's gift sent from above, one real unselfish love I found in my mother's eyes.
And if I were hanged on the highest tree, I know whose tears would come up to me. My mother's. And if I were drowned in the deepest sea, I know whose tears would come down to me, my mother's. For the world may call you failure, and the fates may grind you small, but in the eyes of your mother, you're as big and as great as them all.
Just like a wandering sparrow, one lonely soul, I'll walk the straight and narrow to reach my goal. God's gift sent from above, one real unselfish love I found in a mother's eyes.
I have flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the Tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.